Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
We've been listening to President Trump wrapping up a news conference here in New York. The president talking about everything from trade deals to China to the House moving forward with a formal impeachment inquiry. He said he supports transparency on whistleblower information, but he is also demanding transparency from the Democrats. He said the timing of the impeachment inquiry announcement yesterday while he was at the UN, that was all planned on the part of the Democrats. And he also said that he does not like the precedent of releasing details of calls between the president and foreign leaders. But he did talk about a number of things. This, of course, happening on a day where he also spoke side by side at a bilateral with the president of Ukraine earlier today from the sidelines of the UN General Assembly. And we saw the markets actually finish up on the day. Close to the session highs, we saw a sell-off in bonds. We got the yields back to 1.74% or thereabouts. We had strength in banks, and we had strength also in technology. Let's get to Eamon Javers, who had been at the press conference, actually got the first question into the president. Eamon.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to ask the president this idea of what the American people should think about this scandal. Should the American people be happy about a U.S. president asking a foreign leader for information about his political rival? And I asked the president that, and I also asked him, ultimately, what would you have done if Barack Obama had done this and you had discovered that? The president, you know, sort of gave a very long answer there, but ultimately didn't defend the principle of American presidents asking for foreign help. What he did do was talk a lot about his administration. He talked a lot about how well things are going in the economy. The president gives a long answer here, but ultimately not really saying why it is that Americans should want American presidents asking for foreign help in dealing with political issues. He did say his concern is corruption in the Ukraine. It's somebody who said he's very focused on the new Ukrainian president, who came into office in an anti-corruption wave. And he said that was one of the things that was on his mind, guys.
All right. Eamon, we were listening to your question very carefully. We were listening to the president's answer very carefully and didn't seem to quite connect the two. But thanks for trying, Eamon Javers. Right there with the president. Let's bring in our traders now. Pete Najarian, Karen Feinerman, Dan Nathan, and Guy Adami. We were talking, of course, last night a great deal because of Nancy Pelosi's announcement of the inquiry, the formal inquiry into impeachment. What did you make of the market's reaction today? Pair that with what has transpired today, because, again, we had two appearances from the president today, one alongside the Ukrainian president.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people will say that today's rally was based on the fact that maybe there's not a lot to, you know, Nancy Pelosi's statements last night, and maybe this impeachment's not going to go very far. Maybe it's over before it begins. I don't think it was necessarily that. I think it was more that President Trump at one point today said, we're a lot closer to a deal with the Chinese than the market is giving credit for, that we're getting credit for. You'll be surprised. I'm paraphrasing, but that language, to me, that's why the market went up, you know, Dow 180-so points. Now, whether that's true or not, we're going to find out, obviously, over the next couple weeks. I still submit probably no deal. And as a matter of fact, I think Jamie Dimon said the same thing. He doesn't see a deal with the Chinese before the 2020 election. So again, do you think this is the right environment to have a VIX which traded north of 17 yesterday, probably closed into 15s today? Yep. I still think, and by the way, I've thought this for a while and been wrong, but I still think in this environment, given this backdrop, the VIX is way too low.
It was a risk-off kind of day, we should note. I mean, the VIX was down more than 6%. Yields went back up. We moved probably 10 basis points over the course of the past 24 hours. We had strength in the regional banks, which were up almost 2%, and we had strength in a lot of the FANG names, the big tech tech stocks.
I think sentiment in the FANG names has gotten a particularly negative, specifically Netflix, and that, you know, see that thing snap back 4%. I think if you want want to focus on the market action intraday and you want to tie it to the commentary about a China trade deal, all you have to do is look at the semiconductor space. The SMH, the ETF that tracks it, had a 3% reversal from its lows earlier in the morning to closing towards its highs.
So this is China.
Yeah, I think it is China, but I think it's really important. Remember, you guys had a really good conversation on Power Lunch today with Michelle Caruso Carrera. You're just saying that there's really no incentive now for the Chinese to do a deal, because as long as the impeachment kind of drags out a little bit here, then you get in the election cycle, and the Chinese just don't have incentive to do a deal right then. So we're going to be going back and forth on these sorts of announcements, but pretty soon they're going to be blunted. They're not going to have the sort of impact that they have on a day like today.
Karen?
Yeah, I've been thinking that for a while, that, I mean, every time there's some negative news and Trump seems to be somewhat on the ropes, interestingly, that coincides with positive news on the China trade.
Right, making progress.
So I'm very skeptical of that, right? And I actually think part of the rally, there was some very dovish comments. Was it Bullard? And I think that was the second leg up, you know, first coming out with the China trade. And then I agree with you on the VIX. I'm long VIX. I think the VIX should be higher. There's so many potential things that could happen. But, I mean, today was sort of an impressive market. It's ironic to me that banks were up and, you know, the dovish comments. Right. Those I think of as somewhat at odds.
Right. We did
on
see,
cutting.
Yeah.
Right.
We saw steepening of the yield curve.
Right.
With the 10-year rising.
And so. Then interesting, you know, oil down. Oil is almost round tripped.
I think.
But has it?
Yeah,
OK.
I believe it has. Yeah.
But we haven't seen whether there's any response yet. I don't know. Is that it? Was that the end of the whole thing? I'm a little skeptical that it was. So for all those reasons, I want to be long volatility. I am, and I think volatility will be higher.
And I think it makes sense to be long volatility, or at least long some put protection against positions that you have on, depending on where the exposure levels are. Are they through the S&P 500? Is it the NASDAQ? Right. Depending on where it is, maybe it's just financials themselves. The volatility is really low. I mean, it's amazingly low given the backdrop of everything that we've got. Mm-hmm. The one thing I disagree with Dan on would be incentives for the Chinese. Let's be honest. They are suffering over there. When we look at their numbers, they continue to be very, very bad. And we talk about decades of go type numbers that they are sitting on. So I think that they would like to make a deal. But obviously, with the president and all that's going on now, that is something that's going to be much more difficult to try to figure out, is what kind of time frame do we have? Is Jamie Dimon right that we go all the way through the 2020 elections? Or does something happen? I'm not thinking something's going to happen in October, but I do think that maybe there could be some progress along the way as we get towards the end of the year onto talking about getting something done. And I think more importantly for the Chinese, but I'll tell you what, the Chinese markets today, we had more unusual option buying today in different the ASHR, which is the China 300.
Those were like teeny options. They were like October 28.5 calls that were buying for 22
right.
cents.
Probably because of the fact that there's still talk about October,
but
Dan.
But that's not real. Like, that's not anything.
Okay, FXI is another one. 30,000+ of those being bought to the upside. Well, you're saying okay, but
just
these are facts. These are numbers that we see every day.
Yeah.
You can't deny the numbers.
Dude,
I'm giving you the numbers.
I'm a serious options player who would look at somebody buying short-dated options for 22 cents, 10,000 in a clip, and say,
right.
That's real commitment, and that's like, yo, China.
And some of these are going out to January as well, by the way.
Okay.
So not everything is short term.
I just disagree. I don't think it's particularly
I'm not
impactful.
Trying to push your buttons. I'm just saying that numbers are there.
Okay, but I think the bigger issue is here. You're talking
options
about the VIX
action.
At 14.5. It doesn't really matter.
It's
what's
16.
The data that we're talking about here?
I understand your point, but we have to. What is your bottom line point that you're trying to make?
My bottom line is, I think that there's more issues going on with the Chinese themselves right now than us in terms of economic situations. Now, politically, we all know it's focused right on us. And it is amazing to me that we have a 16 VIX right now. That's a 1% move today, or each and every single day that we sit at 16. We're getting some massive moves. We talk about volatility being volatile. This has been volatile. Where were we today? We were up, we were down, and then we finished up nearly. That was a huge round trip we had today. People need to expect to see that almost every day, and because of social media and the president that we've got here in the United States.
Has your view of the political situation and the impact on the markets, more importantly, changed in the past 24 hours, given what President Zelensky of Ukraine said, which was, nobody pushed me to do anything.
Right.
And what happened this afternoon
with
the president.
And the conversation you had on Power Lunch, I mean, what was he going to say? He wasn't going to go and sandbag the president of the United States in that forum. I don't think it's political suicide. Clearly, there's probably, you know, I'm sure there are things for him and his people that they want as well. again, I'm not a political theorist. There was no way he was going to say otherwise. But to answer your question, no, not necessarily. Again, I can't believe, well, maybe I should believe it, and this is not a political comment, but I can't believe the Democrats went into this yesterday knowing the political suicide it could potentially be for them and their candidates without having something more than what we just heard today. So I do think this is going to last longer than people think.
And there are some today that say that the real casualty will be Joe Biden himself.
Yes, yeah. That's what I think. The real casualty could be Joe Biden, in which case that makes a Warren presidency more likely, and that is really probably pretty bearish for the stock market.
Well, I mean, everything from the war on wealth all the way to health care, right? I mean, we have seen the chart from I believe it was Jefferies, where they show when the spread of Warren over Biden, where Warren is leading over Biden, goes wider, the XLV goes lower.
Yeah, there's I think that you can draw a line back to the 2016 campaign and look at the things why Trump was so popular, this populist message, and you can draw that line straight to Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. And I think that there's people who actually are in the middle of this, and I just don't think it's going to be as negative for the economy and for stock market as a lot of people think, because if you think about, you know, what's going on here, we have global growth slowing. This is what I want to get back to the data. I think you could have a skinny China trade deal any day now. It could be just addressing the trade deficit, but doesn't affect the fact that we have global growth slowing. You saw the auto numbers in Germany down 12% year over year. EU auto sales down 3%. It's not just China, you know, and the thing about Chinese growth being weak, okay, and getting worse, it reverberates all over the world. So if our growth is at 2.5% or something like that, that's not particularly, you know, fantastic here. So I guess my only point is you may get a deal about buying soybeans or buying pork. It doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. Substantive. What did we do? Why did we take this pain for the trade war for the last year to do substantive stuff on the technology front? That's the war to be fought going forward. We're not going to get an answer to that anytime soon. And that's what Jamie Dimon's saying.
But what's interesting is what pain, and I'm just playing devil's advocate, but what pain have we taken, really, if you think about it? I mean,
because the tariffs have been delayed or carved out or exemptions.
Things have been sort of delayed. Stock market's at an all-time high. Unemployment. So the pushback would be, we really haven't taken any pain at
about?
All.
So the farmers got $36 billion. The auto guys have. The steel haven't got it. Well, like, there's plenty of people who have it. And prices are going to go up as long as the tariffs stick around.
Right. So and we don't know how high. We don't know what the GDP would have been.
Or if business not, spending right, would have
if
been.
If not for this headwind of
CapEx has been anemic. I mean, yeah. I don't know. It's all out there. The data.
We'll bring you any more developments as we have them. Meantime, coming up, Peloton sets a price at any moment. This during a week where the IPO buzz is ground to a halt. We'll bring you the very latest, plus KB Home just reported results. We'll break down the numbers, and later one technician says today's bank bounce is here to stay. He'll tell us what is in the charts. We're live from Times Square in New York City. Much more Fast Money right after this.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got an earnings alert on KB Home, the home builder in the red, but off the after-hours session lows. Let's get to Diana Olick in Washington, D.C. with the latest. Diana.
Well, Melissa, it was a strong beat on earnings as demand for newly built homes really jumped over the summer. Slight miss on revenue, though, but KB stock ended higher after analyst Buck Horne at Raymond James upgraded it to outperform today. KB reported a 24% jump in new orders, and its backlog rose 14% to 6,230 homes. Its average selling price fell 7%, but that was due to a community mix shift in the West. KB CEO Jeff Metzger said the company was able to raise prices in 90% of its communities thanks to strong demand. The cancellation rate also improved to 20% from 26%. Metzger said the company is on track for a strong finish to 2019, especially given its position in the market as catering to the first-time buyer.
Market conditions remain favorable, supported by low mortgage interest rates, steady economic growth, high consumer confidence, and positive demographic trends. While demand is healthy, supply continues to be insufficient to meet homebuyers' needs, particularly at the affordable price points where we operate, which is a key element of our success.
Now, we also got the numbers on new home sales in August this morning, and they were much stronger than expected, up both for the month and 18% higher than August of last year. Supplies of newly built homes are now lower annually for the first time this year. Demand clearly bolstered by falling mortgage rates. They came down all summer, but most sharply in August, and that brought buyers out. Rates have turned slightly higher again this month, but analysts I spoke to would say so far it's not enough to dampen this new demand. Back to you guys.
All right, Diana. Thank you, Diana Olick. We should keep in mind on the back of those new home sales numbers, we had strong performances in these home builders. KB Homes was actually up by about 3%. So this decline in the after-hour session is really not too bad, especially for a stock that's up 70% this year.
It's a huge move. I mean, this is a $20 stock. It seems a couple weeks ago it's up. Where's it close? At 33.5 or so. But you want to sort of poke some holes. I'll play the game with you. Cancellation rate was 20% this quarter. It was 15% last quarter. Average closing price was lower than expected. So there are things to be concerned about. People, the bulls will point to valuation correctly and say it 10 times forward. It's cheap, and they probably have about a 13% EPS growth rate, which is obviously very good. The question is it too much too fast? And there, you know, are there some storm clouds coming over for the home builders? Mm-hmm. Personally, I'd be inclined to take profits in this name.
I mean, we did see consumer confidence weaken.
Yes, that was just one data point, though. One other thing about the numbers that came out today, the prior month was revised meaningfully higher as well. So that's interesting to me. I think even with the run that it's had, remember it had a terrible drop at the end of last year, I think that the whole space, they all moved together, but I think the whole space is still inexpensive. And this has been a multi-year change that I don't think has been reflected in this space. And I think, and rates keep getting just lower and lower. So I like the space. I like, Lennar is one I know you like.
I do. I presently am in Toll, and I'm in another one, TriPoint, but only in call options because of the run that they've had, Mel. I mean, I think this is the great opportunity. We talk about how do you play volatility. Well, this is another way to play it. I'm not buying stocks after they've made 50, 60, 70, 80% moves to the upside. I'll certainly buy the upside calls, though, and I think that's been a good strategy. When you look at the numbers that these guys are putting out and still where they're trading, to your point, Guy, they're still fairly inexpensive. You're getting dividend yields out of some of these as well. So there is reason to understand why a lot of people are still looking to the upside. Raymond James had a huge upgrade today across that whole sector.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just interesting. So the number that we got year over year, interest rates were much higher last year. And we're obviously seeing it's just a function. I think that obviously the lower rates, but, you know, that supply demand dynamic is something that is likely to continue to play out. I mean, there just seems to be not a whole heck of a lot of supply and the lower, longer that rates stay lower.
And employment, right? Employment just continues to...
One other point. Peter Buchmeier, friend of a show here, he had a note out this morning. He was saying that the 713,000, which has really been the average, that was the number in August, has been the average for the last 25 years. I think that's pretty interesting in a way. So when you smooth out the volatility that you've had over the last couple of years, it's not some excessive number. Year over year looks better than it is.
All right, let's stick with rates here. Interesting action in the bond market today. We referenced this the top of the show. The 10-year yield back above 1.7% moves this week, capping off a roller coaster ride in bond land over the summer, of course. Yields tumbling to 3-year lows in early September as trade worries kept investors on their toes. So what's next for the bond market? What do you make of this big bounce?
I was surprised. I mean, the 10-year, I think at one point today was 164.5, 165. I mean, the moves in the bond, if you think about it just for a second, I mean, 10-year yields a couple weeks ago were 147, I think we topped. That's where we top tick in terms of the TLT, basically, low tick in terms of yields. I mean, that is a staggering move percentage-wise. Bond markets in a developed country like this shouldn't move that way. That's beside the point. I still think yields are going lower. I think the move back to 185 in the 10-year was sort of the retracement. And I do think we're headed back and going to retest that 145 level. But to answer your question, the reversal today was significant. Surprised me.
Yeah. And in the banks, I mean, that's really
nice move in some of these banks. We had some huge upside buying today in Citi, for instance. Mm-hmm. But JP Morgan, was it an all-time high today?
Not quite.
Really close. I mean, some of these names moving to the upside. Goldman Sachs, actually, when you look at the push from where it was to where it is now, Mel, you can understand a lot of the attractiveness that right now that people feel towards a lot of these banks.
All right. Well, let's get more on the direction of rates and banks. Bring in Mark Newton of Newton Advisors. He's over at the Plasma here to give us the charts. Mark.
Thanks, Melissa. Hi. You know, increasingly, you're starting to see more and more strength out of the banks, despite the fact that yields have actually gone lower for the last 10 months. So you take a look at the main bank ETF, the KBE. It's showing you a couple different things. Prices have been largely range-bound over the last 5 months. However, they're starting to show increasing signs of strength just in the last few weeks, and we're testing these prior highs. Getting over that prior high would allow us to make a move right back up towards, you know, the prior peaks that we saw. So that's really the one thing to put into example. Financial ETF, the XLF, this is something has shown a very decent longer-term base just going back since that prior peak. And so despite the fact that yields have been falling, you've seen a decent amount of strength to move right up to test this prior level in XLF. So my thinking is, you know, it's likely that we're going to start to see increasing signs of financials starting to rally despite the fact that yields are falling. Finally, this is what puts it all into perspective, is the fact that on a relative basis, financials have actually been strengthening despite the fact that yields have been falling. This is a relative chart of XLF versus the S&P. You see that we're starting to make higher and higher lows, even though we're still in a downtrend from last February. This is a time when yields largely started to peak out and started to fall. Of course, we peaked on around last November and have been falling ever since in yield. But now you're starting to strengthen at a time when yields are still very much in a downtrend. We rallied about 10 basis points today in yields in the 10-year. And, of course, the yield curve has popped to about 5 basis points. But in general, this is a sector to really pay attention to. It's not going to take much more. You've already seen stocks like JPM hit new all-time highs, Citigroup and Bank of America well-positioned, and Pete was talking about upside call buying and things like Citigroup. And so I think the sector is really starting to look a lot more interesting at a time when, you know, everybody's been talking for years about, okay, the financials are in good shape structurally, but now finally you're starting to see technically at least a few signs of this group finally starting to work.
Mark, I'm curious because if you take a look at that chart, for instance, that September lowest low coincides with where we saw the lows for yields effectively, right? And so right. Financials have really been dependent on where spreads go and where yields go. So when you take a look at the chart of spreads or the chart of the 10-year yield, for instance, right. Does it follow typical technical patterns? I mean, can you actually analyze it technically with great as much accuracy as another chart when so many people are saying that there are so many other external factors, you know, dictating the direction of yields?
I think you're right. I mean, I think the yield curve is probably a little bit better something to concentrate on versus just a 10-year itself. Because as, you know, I noted, you know, yields have been actually falling since last November, and yet we've seen actually a decent amount of strength in the XLF. And, of course, a lot of that's Berkshire, you know, Wells Fargo, Citi, Bank of America, the big boys. But yet, you know, the sector has managed to strengthen on an absolute basis and looks in far better shape than it should, given the fact that yields have just been really falling pretty dramatically. So my thinking is, you know, yields likely are going to bottom around 2016 or even 2012 lows. And, you know, that's right around 131 to 136 mm-hmm. or so. And, you know, it's tough to make too much of this bounce today, 163 to 173 now. But, you know, I think that in general, it should be a level that yields start to stabilize. And if that's the case, then, you know, the U.S. is still, you know, growing faster than a lot of the world. And if yields start to turn higher, then you know, that should be a decent sign for the XLF and with regards to the yield curve as well.
All right, Mark, thank you. Mark Newton of Newton Advisors. We had a bunch of bank bulls comment to the right of me. So, yeah. Dan, I'll ask you what you think.
Well, I would just say there's only one bank right now. It's J.P. Morgan. The investment banks are down 25% from their 2018 highs. That's Morgan Stanley. That's Goldman Sachs. You have Bank of America and you have Citi, each down about 12% from their highs. I see what he's saying in relative strength. I want to make one point, what you made, Karen, earlier in the show. When Trump's back is up against the wall, he goes back to his greatest hits. One of his greatest hits is calling for lower rates. And as Trump gets in more trouble, if this situation mushrooms a little bit, that means Senator Warren rises in the polls. A double negative for rates, a double negative for banks. Like what I'm saying is, so yeah. I don't really see it as a great setup. If you want to own a bank, own JP Morgan, because they got your guy.
You think rates will go lower under Warren? I think they'll go higher.
Banks under Warren?
I think not the banks. Rates.
Rates go lower because Trump's going to keep hitting him. From here, as Warren rises, banks go lower because Warren's going to keep hitting him.
because of the fear of regulatory pressures?
I think I get that. I know obviously the yield curve is really important to banks, but I think what's been happening is the rotation out of momentum towards value. Mm-hmm. This sector is really a value play, even having moved a lot. Right. J.P. Morgan still at 11, 12 times earnings. That's not crazy.
All right. Coming up, chip stocks ripping higher this month, and options traders say there is one name in the space that's gearing up for an even bigger semi-surge. Plus, the Juul CEO stepping down and one big tobacco deal in ashes. We'll lay out what is next for the tobacco stocks. Much more Fast Money straight ahead.
The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura's been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Big news in the tobacco world. Juul CEO Kevin Burns is stepping down. This comes as the company faces growing scrutiny over its role in a public health crisis that has seen at least 9 vaping-related deaths, 10 as of the latest count here. News of his departure coming as a big tobacco deal goes up in smoke. Altria, which has a big stake in Juul, 35%, and Philip Morris ending merger talks. The deal would have created a $200 billion tobacco giant. Altria CEO spoke to CNBC earlier today about the called-off merger.
We are always looking for opportunities to strengthen our position, and ultimately we thought it was worth a discussion with Philip Morris International about whether there was an opportunity to merge. Ultimately, we couldn't come to terms, and so we're back focused on our very strong position in the U.S. market.
So clearly a lot of developments today. Pete, what's your take?
You know, I got to tell you something. I think there's so much regulatory issues that are going to be facing these guys for a while now that I think it's almost like a hands-off. Now, I own some calls to the upside right now on Altria just because people had been buying these, expecting something very positive out of this deal. Obviously, we're not seeing it. It's not a big reaction, at least on that side of things. So I think those are going to probably end up going out worthless. They had a little bit of a move early, but now they've gone away. I think there's just so much to this whole thing, and everybody's a part of this. It's the president on down, and everybody seems to be getting more and more negative. And we talked in the green room. Does this start to affect any of the other, you know, side areas, like in the marijuana world and some of the rest of that? How much is going to be affected here?
Right. Karen.
Yeah. No, I was wondering about that. Is this what's part of you are the pot queen?
You are the pot queen. I meant to say that.
Is this some of what is being, you know,
the uncertainty,
right, of the bear case in cannabis world?
I think that if there are questions about vaping and there are crackdowns on vaping, then that is going to be an area of business that might be sort of delayed or stunted, at least for now, until there's more clarity on what exactly is behind all of these deaths. So I do, you know, that could certainly contribute to this whole thing.
I would think it would. I was surprised, though, that PM was up on this news. I would have thought that this would have been a dead in the water deal from last week. I don't know. Maybe people still believed it might happen.
I was surprised that Altria wasn't down
more
right. on the day because
it bounced
back. Altria felt like it didn't
finish the highs of the session.
Like they knew it was going to break, and the PM shareholders didn't.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
How is that possible?
Which can be deemed encouraging. I mean, but this stock's been cut in half now in three years, effectively, when the stock market's at all-time highs. So people say valuation. I don't see any compelling reason, and we're saying it just tonight. We've been saying it for a while. I don't really see any compelling reason to buy it. Now, with that said, this is ripe for a Nelson Peltz to sort of get his arms around, or a Carl Icahn type. I mean, this would be a trophy for them in a major way. So
what
you could see an activist,
really, but
I have no idea.
If you open their playbook, there aren't businesses
Should they buy cannabis? Should they buy vape? What are they going to do? These guys are so desperate.
I'm just throwing it out there. It wouldn't be surprising, let's put it that way. But I don't know what they would do.
I'd be surprised.
You'd be surprised.
I would.
I'd also be surprised.
You don't know what you're. I don't know what you're. You know.
You're facing so many hurdles.
Find a name.
It would be a
surprise. At a ridiculous.
There are
discount.
No easy fixes to this declining tobacco
fixes.
Business.
That's fair.
For more on this tobacco deal breakdown, be sure to tune in to Squawk on the Street's exclusive interview with the Philip Morris CEO. That is tomorrow, 9 a.m. Eastern Time. Coming up, Peloton set to price its IPO any moment now. This during a week where the IPO buzz has ground to a halt. We'll bring you the very latest. Plus, check out the chip stock up more than 65% this year. And options traders are betting on an even bigger breakout ahead. We'll tell you the name. Don't go anywhere. Much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. We're just moments away from Peloton's IPO pricing. Let's get to Dom Chu in the newsroom for more on what to expect. Dom.
Waiting with bated breath, almost like I've been on a Peloton bike myself, guys. So here's what we do know so far. We've got 40 million shares being sold by the company in Class A shares. They've got a dual class share structure. The current announced range right now, $26 to $29 per share. There is an underwriter option to sell an additional 6 million shares, so call that 43 million shares. If they sell all of those, they're looking to raise just about $1.2 to $1.3 billion. That could value the company at between, say, $7.7 and $8.3 billion, depending on how many shares are sold, what that price is at the midpoint, and then how many shares they actually have outstanding, given the fully diluted or non-fully diluted. Basically, it depends on how you calculate it. There are a lot of assumptions that go into it. Now, remember, this is another company with growing revenues. Yes, a lot of growing revenues, but they also have accelerating losses as well. Peloton is reporting about $915 million in revenues in the fiscal year that ended just in June. That's 110% higher versus the same time last year. But now losses are running at $245 million. That's five times what we saw in 2018. So what it comes down to is, this is one of the most highly anticipated IPOs out there, as our own Julia Borson has been reporting, Melissa and gang, the first of the 2019 CNBC Disruptor 50 class to go public. So a lot of anticipation for this big exercise bike and technology company, guys. We'll bring you the latest as soon as we know the pricing here. Melissa, I'll send things back over to you.
Thank you very much, Dom Chu. Dom Chu, who is back at headquarters.
HQ.
Waiting for the news to cross. And as it crosses, he will bring it to
hard
us live.
He almost works as hard as you do. It's
a hard man.
Thank you, Dom.
You got it, guys.
Peloton set to start trading tomorrow during a week where the hottest IPOs have crashed, even Beyond Meat going cold, tumbling double digits in that time. So can Peloton survive the IPO carnage? Do you get the Peloton business model?
Okay. Well, I love Peloton.
As do I. Two
separate
Peloton questions.
All the time. I have more than one. I have a hard time with the income statement, though. I have a hard time with the expenses. And, they talk about the total addressable market. I don't know I'm not as optimistic on the total addressable market, right? It's an expensive machine to buy. It's an expensive machine to subscribe to. Obviously, that's a good part of their business. I think the treadmill maybe hasn't been, I don't know. I'm not clear if the treadmill is really...
Was as popular as the bike.
Yes, was as popular as the bike. I love the product. I probably would not own the stock around this range.
Guy, you're also a Peloton
love
user.
It.
And
I'm going to give a
stock?
Shout out. I mean, Dennis is my guy. Hannah Marie, Jen Strom.
Really?
Love them all.
Oh, yeah.
And I get on that
I like
thing.
Allie Love.
Yeah? She,
oh. Yes. I mean, some of those classes are ridiculous.
Alex Tucson, he's great.
But to your point, it's a $2,000 bike, a $5,000 treadmill. You pay $50 a month. You know, you have to ask yourself, what is the addressable market?
$50 a month.
I mean, in some ways, the addressable market is everybody on the planet. We all should be in shape, right?
Right.
But it ain't.
Not going to happen.
Yeah, it ain't going to happen. So I'm somewhat skeptical. With that said, the NASDAQ continues to do well on the listing front. I think they will be here tomorrow.
Nice.
I think the way you play this is NDAQ, and I've said that for a while.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're getting to a point in this cycle where we're starting to see a lot of these companies come public that don't actually have public comps. They're kind of, you know, like Beyond Meat, you just mentioned that one before, and people don't know how to do. So you have this scarcity value on something that sounds like a great idea. No one really knows how to value it versus comparables, so they can go ballistic. I suspect this one does well with investors because every one of us on this desk owns them. We know the product, right? It's kind of like the old Peter Lynch sort of thing, you know?
Right.
You feel, and
only 511,000 know the product, right? I mean, when you look at the numbers, the numbers don't add up. And the biggest problem I have is, how are they going to make money? They're losing five times more money now than they were in 2018. That's a huge issue to me. This feels like Uber. It feels like Lyft.
You have to spend to grow, Pete. That's
you
the
absolutely
argument, right?
do. But when they try to tell us they're a media company and not an exercise company, that tells me a lot about the company.
We have an important disclosure to make here. CNBC parent company Comcast, NBC Universal, is an investor in Peloton. All right, up next, chip stocks getting a boost today, and options traders are betting one name in the space is about to rip even higher. We'll break down all the action. Take a look at the Cramer cam. Jim is talking with the CEO of Twilio. That full interview coming up at the top of the hour on Mad Money. We're live at the NASDAQ in Times Square. More Fast Money still ahead. Welcome back to Fast Money. Check out shares of Western Digital catching a bit today. The data giant now at more than 11% in the last month. Options traders are betting on those gains rolling into next month, too. Mike Coe is right here in the studio with the action. Hey, Mike.
Hey there. How are you? Okay, so let's take a look at what was going on in Western Digital today. We saw more than two times as many calls as puts trade. What was interesting, the activity I was seeing, was the October 11th weekly 62 calls. Now, why is this interesting? We do often see weekly calls trade, often the week prior to something that's going to go on. They're going to be reporting earnings on October 24th. So this is somebody who's making a bullish bet that we're going to see a rise in Western Digital of 4% or more prior to earnings. And so I think that is pretty notable. We could take a quick peek at the chart and just take a look at what we're looking at here. So we're looking at getting above $62 by at least the amount of premium that they spent, bearing in mind that they're expecting this to take place within the next 2 weeks, and we're probably going to see earnings right around here. So obviously they're eyeing some short-term moves. We also, by the way, saw some significant call activity in Juniper as well today.
All right. And Dan, you're watching Micron?
Yes. You know, this is kind of tied to the same trade. We talked about semis earlier in the show. Huge intraday reversal. Micron reports tomorrow after the close, implying about $3.75 move or so in either direction. That's a pretty large move. So I think so goes Micron. So goes the rest of the group near term.
All right. Thanks for the action, Mike, in-house. For more options action, tune into the full show. That's Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. Up next, final trades.
Welcome back to Fast Money. I'm Dominic Chu. We've got some news on General Motors right now. CNBC has learned, according to two sources familiar with the negotiations, that the United Auto Workers Union and GM are close to a tentative agreement that could end the ongoing strike by the UAW against General Motors. The negotiators have been meeting all day, but progress is being made. So Melissa will keep an eye on those shares, bringing more as we know more on our side. Melissa, I'll send things back over to you.
Thank you, Dom Chu. Final trade time, Pete.
Talked about home builders. KBH will get you done. KB Homes.
Chairwoman.
Yeah, talked about home builders. HD will get you done.
Nice.
Hey, Dan Nathan.
I'll do that quick. XLF shocker here. I'd be a seller.
Really? I'm shocked. Talked about home builders.
Yeah.
No, but I got
Church and Dwight.
He's got nothing to tie to.
I love Church and Dwight.
What's your
Remember
final
the
trade?
Other day, International Business Machines I made?
Yes. IBM comes up.
Yeah, sure it does.
Yeah.
All right, we'll see you back here tomorrow at 5 for more Fast Mad Money starts right now.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.